Turn to Genesis chapters 2 and 3. Will be the passages we turn to first this morning. With all the sin there is in the world, you would think that there would be great advantages to living a life of sin. For the insistence we make in committing sin and doing things that we ought not to do, you would think there would be great advantages to sin. It would seem as if a life of sin would provide some kind of fulfilling satisfaction. But how often does just this once turn into, well, just one more time? We often act as if one little sin could maybe save a relationship, spare someone's feelings, maybe right some wrong. And how often do we see that one sin usually makes things worse? One sin leads to another. And we maybe see this most clearly when it comes to lying. You lie to get away with something, and then you have to lie to back up that lie, and then you got to lie to back up the lie to the backup lie. And before you know it, you can't keep everything straight. The world would have us believe that sin will make us happy. And that's really just ridiculous. Because when you look at people of the world, and I'm thinking more of famous people who are looking for happiness, what is it they usually do to their lives except run it into the ground with sin? Maybe some kind of sexual sin, drugs, alcohol, trying to gain power, trying to gain some kind of a fame or something. And we find out that the advantages to sin are not that great. So what is it about sin that keeps us coming back? What are the advantages of sin? This morning I want to look at a few case studies. We'll call them Exhibit A through F. We'll pretend we're in court. We're going to make a decision. Is sin advantageous or not? And so we're going to look at a few things, a few examples, a few pieces of evidence to find out whether sin is advantageous or not. I've asked you to turn to Genesis chapters 2 and 3. You know the story. You know the story well. Let's just begin in the beginning. What was the condition that man and woman found themselves in? Adam and Eve. We see in Genesis 2 and verse 25, and the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. There they had this perfect place to live, this perfect garden, and had this perfect relationship with God. It was wonderful. And the commandment was very simple. Don't eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Well, let's not be too hard on them, lest sometimes we commit a sin that seems to be so simple. We know that they eat of the fruit. She is deceived and she eats it for herself. She takes some and gives it to Adam and he eats with her. And then we need to talk about the advantages. What were the advantages of eating this piece of fruit? I'll tell you what they were. It was having a good piece of fruit. I don't guess there's a single piece of fruit that would make me sin. Or vegetable for that matter. A good steak we might talk about. But you know, just a piece of fruit, pomegranate, apple, whatever it may have been, we don't know. But at the end of the day, she sees it and it looks good for food. Now, Satan threw in a few things there. It would make you wise. And so she hoped to get more out of it. And I want to tell you, that right there is where sin deceives us. We hope to get more out of it than we're going to. What we want is wisdom beyond all imagination. And what we get is a dumb piece of fruit that wasn't even worth it. That's it. James is going to preach to us this morning. I love it. I love it when they listen and start repeating it. His mom is going to try to give him a banana tomorrow. And he's like, no, I don't want a dumb piece of fruit. She's going to call me. I'm going to be in trouble. And the advantages are not what she thought it would be. And the consequence is shame. That innocent, that naivete that they had, that was so wonderful, that allowed them to have this relationship with God, this perfect dwelling place. All of a sudden, they knew of their nakedness. Now they knew of their sin. And now they lose that relationship with God. And they lose this perfect dwelling place. Because of sin, because of a piece of fruit, they lose a perfect relationship with God. And so in the very first instance of sin, of such a simple sin, right? It's just a piece of fruit. All we did was take a bite of it. It's not that big of a deal. Except when God says not to do it, it's obviously a big deal. And so the first advantage of sin shows us that it's not worth it. And maybe that it never will be worth it. Turn to Numbers chapter 20. We'll look at Exhibit B. Numbers 20 at verse 8. Take the staff and assemble the congregation, you and Aaron your brother, and tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water. So you shall bring water out of the rock for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle. And Moses took the staff and from before the Lord as he had commanded him. Then Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, shall we bring you water out of this rock?" And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank and their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them." Well, let's just go through our stats here. His condition was the leader of God's chosen people. He was the leader of God's people that He's brought out of Egypt. He's leading them through the promised land. What a great honor. What a great thing he's been working towards. And the commandment was very simple. Speak to the rock. Last time it was hit the rock. This time it's speak to the rock. We might argue that that's easier. We see the sin when he strikes the rock. Now let's consider the advantages of this sin. And the advantage of the sin is not the water. Because God gives that regardless. Let me make a point there. We see God's grace there. That even with sin, God can still give His people what they need. The advantage here is the expression of anger. Because let's be honest, it can feel very good, can't it? Someone says something or does something rude and you pop off. Oh, you put them in their place. You nail them. Or you pull up to a red light. That's my big one. Someone asked the other day on Facebook, he said, if you were to go to jail, what would your family assume your crime had been? Easy. Tiffany would see that I had pulled a rocket launcher out of the back of the car and just blown every red light to smithereens. Especially those three dumb ones down in front of Publix. I can't stand those lights. They need to go away. I'm doing us all a favor, right? And they catch you. And you scream and you yell. Or someone does something to you that's not right. Someone cuts you off and you yell at them. I told you a couple weeks ago about what happened at the ball game in Lincoln. Boy, I wanted to say something to those ladies that were not being very nice. Oh, I wanted to say something. and to give vent to that anger. Oh, that would have felt good. I've joked with my mom. If you know my mom, you won't believe this. My mom has a temper. She does. My sister's here. She can vouch for that. The ping pong paddles that have been broken speak for themselves. On her, not me. And mom and I will often say, oh, I should have told them. You ever have that feeling? Later, you're thinking about it, man, I wish I would have said. I tell you what, it's probably good that you didn't. It's probably good that I didn't say that at that time, because it would have made everything worse. Oh, but that vent to our anger feels so good. And we want to give in to that. Well, what a silly consequence, or what a silly advantage for the consequence that he gets, that he is not allowed to lead the people in. He had been working, it seems, his whole life for this. He was born for this, it seems. And now he spends 40 years in the wilderness with this people. Over in Hebrews it says, choosing rather to suffer with these people. He could have been in a palace in Egypt. No, he gave all that up to go with the people. And then he strikes the rock to vent anger. And this is what happens. Let me ask you, Moses, was it worth it? I think he would say absolutely not every single time. When he is robbed, or not robbed, when he is prevented from having that opportunity, something he looked so forward to. Exhibit C. And turn to 2 Samuel chapter 11 and 12. And the story of David and Bathsheba. Again, we know the story. We don't have to go through it too much. We know David's condition. He is the king of God's people. He has been successful beyond all imagination without failure, it seems. Everything David does succeeds. Everything David touches turns to gold. He was, it seems, perfect. After the story, you'll remember what Nathan tells him. You had all this, you had all this, you had all this. And if that weren't enough, I would have given you more, God says. He had everything, it seems. And the commandment we'd think is pretty simple. Do not commit adultery. Do not murder. Can't really accidentally do one of those, it seems. And yet we know that he does have commit adultery with Bathsheba. And then he murders Uriah. Well, we know the advantage to this sin. We know that he had the physical pleasure of a sexual relationship. No doubt that we understand that. Our world maybe struggles with that more than any other desire and temptation. That pleasure from that relationship, and then maybe even the emotional high of thinking he had covered it up. Whew. Dodged a bullet there. Man, you know how it is when you think you're supposed to get in trouble and you don't get in trouble. Oh man, just the relief there. In chapter 12, as David is hearing the story of the man with the lamb, and how it was stolen from him, David jumps up in verse 5. You can almost see this scene. He jumps up in verse 5. As the Lord lives, the man who has done this deserves to die. And he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity. David himself spoke the punishment, the consequence for this sin. He should have died. God was gracious. But then he says, the lamb shall repay, or the man shall repay the lamb fourfold. And I guess it was my father who had pointed this out to me. That's exactly what David paid. The child dies. David has a daughter who is raped by Amnon. Amnon is then killed by Absalom. And then Absalom usurps the throne and is killed. Do you think the momentary physical pleasure of the relationship with Bathsheba was worth the destruction of his family? Sure, there was an advantage. Sure, it felt good. That's what our world says now, isn't it? If it feels good, do it. You do you. But there was no real advantage when you consider the consequences. Turn to Luke 15. Exhibit D. The story of the prodigal son. He has a wonderful relationship with his family. They are together. He works with his brother. He works with his father. It's a wonderful family. Things are great. He wants for nothing. The commandment's pretty simple. Honor your father and your mother. Instead, he decides to dishonor his father, basically saying, I wish you were dead. Give me what's mine. And he takes half the inheritance. And then he goes and has loose or reckless or prodigal living. And there's an advantage to that, I guess. We can have some fun. There's a lot going on this earth. There's a lot of things that we can do. We can party. We can play. We can do all this fun stuff. We can get high. We can get drunk. We can do whatever the world says is fun. But eventually, the seeds that we have sown mature. And in verse 16, it says that as he was feeding the pigs, he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. Here's how bad it had gotten. And you hear teenagers say this all the time. You hear people, oh, I just had to get out from the house. Oh, it was just so burdensome. Ah. And they just complain and, you know, all that mess. And then they have to go get a real job. They have to go actually start living life. And they're trying to have fun and things are great. I want you to think about what we're talking about here. We're talking about a Jew who is having to feed pigs. Nothing could be more insulting for a Jew than to have to be pigs. Except there could be something more insulting. It could be looking down at the slop you're feeding the pigs and wanting it for yourself. Boy, I'd love a big bowl of that. And he finally comes to his senses, it says. But look at this sin, just living this life. And sure, it was fun for a minute. And then life happens. And everything comes crashing down. And what we thought was a great advantage, this great freedom, this great fun that we were getting to have, all of a sudden comes crashing down. And we realize that we have nothing, that we've wasted everything. It's funny. You ever come into maybe just a little bit of money, maybe a little bonus or something? Does that scare anybody else when extra money shows up? It always scares me because I know I'm about to get a bill in the mail. And you have this little extra money and you're not even living sinfully. And yet it can be gone so quickly. You know, oh well, I got to get a new pair of shoes. I really need a new pair of pants. Well, while I'm there, I'll get a tie. All of a sudden, the money's gone. And it's not like you've been doing sin. Imagine out living this kind of a life and then waking up with nothing. Oh, I'm having so much fun. Only to realize that you're not having fun because you don't have anything. Again, sin promises more, but delivers much less. Exhibit E. Judas, one of the 12 apostles. Theoretically, he's going to be one of the men who takes the gospel out to the world. He's going to be one of Jesus' chosen ambassadors to change the world. I guess the commandment, we could look at maybe a number of them, but love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. He certainly didn't do that. And the advantages of his sin, Jesus says, you betray the Son of Man with a kiss. a kiss, just like for today, was a sign of affection. We've romanticized the kiss, but it was just a sign of affection. And so greet one another with a holy kiss, says Paul. And he betrays the Son of Man. And what was the advantage? 30 pieces of silver. That's it. It's not even that much money. That's the basic price of a slave of the day. It's nothing. You'd hardly call that an advantage. It was so little that he's going to give it back. It's funny. He takes it to the temple. This is really funny to me. He takes it back to him and he says, no, I can't take this. Take it. And they say, no, it's blood money. Yeah, you gave it to him. The people that gave it to him won't take it back because they understand what it was used for. But here is one of Jesus' should be closest friends, one of Jesus' apostles. He betrays him for a measly 30 pieces of silver. And we read about his gruesome death. If you put the end of Matthew and the beginning of Acts together, it appears that he hung himself, and then the tree maybe broke, and when his swollen body hit the ground, it exploded. That's what this advantage came to. Was it worth it? Maybe it promised. We've talked before about this as we've been finishing up the Life of Christ study in our Bible classes. We're not exactly sure what all maybe Judas had in mind. He was greedy. I think we can prove that beyond the shadow of a doubt. But maybe he thought this would force Jesus' hand. Maybe he thought that this would get things rolling in a more of a kind of rebellion against the Romans kind of a thing. So sin promises something so great, the luxury of money, the awesomeness of a rebellion and a revolution that you had a hand in starting, and what it delivers is death. That's the consequences that Judas finds himself in. And our last piece of evidence, Ananias and Sapphira, Exhibit F. Here they are. They are a beneficial part of the church in Jerusalem. They are changing the world. They are doing good things. These people are being written about the way they share their lives with one another. They're doing so much with one another. And the commandment's pretty simple. You shall not bear false witness. Paul is going to say over in Colossians 3, verse 8, do not lie to one another, seeing you have put off the old man. And then we see that they do lie to God. They lie to the Holy Spirit. Peter accuses them of both in Acts chapter 5. For what? For a little extra praise. For a little extra recognition without the full sacrifice. Well, we all like that, don't we? Did you ever have a science project in high school? Let me ask. Does anybody like the science project? I know the teachers don't. The students definitely don't. Why do we continue to do the science project? I never will forget. I didn't know the guy I had been paired up with. Craig, I think, was his name. And I didn't know him. And this was something that was going to take all sorts of work after school. He's like, well, I'll do it. And I was like, well, I'll pay for it. I got a 70. He got a 95. I paid for it. I don't know what happened. But we want the recognition without the full sacrifice. And that's what they were going for here. And they lie. And Ananias falls over dead. And Sapphira comes in, and I'm convinced that she has an opportunity to straighten the record out, to repent. Peter says, hey, did you in fact sell it for this much? And she says, oh yeah, we did. And she falls over dead as well. Again, sin does not deliver what we hope it will. Now I want to take just a few minutes and talk about the truth of sin. Sin promises a lot and delivers very little. My dad had a chart and said, sin will take you further than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay, and cost you more than you want to pay. I've always liked that. And these passages teach the same thing. Turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. Because what we've seen so far from the evidence is that there really aren't advantages to stand. and the Scriptures back that up. 2 Peter 2 at verse 20, "For if after they have escaped the defilements of the world through the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them and overcome, the last state has become worse for them than the first. For it would have been better for them never to have known the way of righteousness than after knowing it to turn back from the holy commandment delivered to them. What the true proverb says has happened to them. The dog returns to its own vomit, and the sow, after washing herself, returns to wallow in the mire." He just outright says that once you've known the goodness of God, once you've had the advantages of a relationship with Jesus Christ, there is nothing but destruction and pity with sin. Nothing to be gained. Turn to Hebrews chapter 3 at verse 13. Hebrews 3 at verse 13. "But exhort one another every day, as long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin." What he says there is very clear. Sin lies. Satan lies. It promises all these great things and then delivers so little. And what we find out is that we can be hardened to it. And it just almost grows, and we want more and more of it, even though it promises less and less. It's almost like a drug. I had DARE in middle school. Do they still do DARE? They don't. Some places. Boy, they scared me straight. I'm not messing with the drug stuff. But I remember one of the things they said, that every time you do it, to get the same feeling, you have to do more. Every time, you have to do a little bit more. And then they show us a bunch of pictures. I'm in seventh grade, people. Had to show us a bunch of pictures of people who have overdosed. Never touched the stuff. They did their job on me. I'm fully in support of DARE. And I think sin's the same way. You have to start doing more and more and more. And that seems to be one of the major, major issues with pornography. One, the ease of access. And the things that I've read say that someone who watches it regularly, the things they watch get progressively worse and more debased and more unnatural and more perverted. Why? Because sin is deceiving us. Look at Hebrews chapter 11 at verse 25. Hebrews 11 at verse 25. We were talking about Moses earlier, how he refused to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. Let's just focus on that last phrase, the fleeting pleasures of sin. Remember when you give vent to your anger? That feels good for how long? What, 5 seconds? David had his relationship with Bathsheba. It's just a moment. It's just a moment, and it's over. All these sins that we think will make us feel better, all these things that we think we'll enjoy, they last but for a fleeting moment, the Hebrew writer says here. And then it's gone. And I think the implication is hell is for eternity. The fleeting pleasure of sin. Turn to James chapter 1 at verse 15. James 1 at verse, I put 15 down. Let's actually start at verse 14. And I want you to notice the underlying sexual language of this passage. "But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death." See, we think, oh, I'm just giving in a little. I'm just indulging a little bit. You do you is what our world says. You do what makes you happy. If it feels good, do it. Give in to yourself a little bit. You deserve this is what our world says. They don't tell you the rest of that. When that sin conceives and it is full grown, it kills us. It stabs us in the back. We need to be fully aware of what the Bible teaches about sin. And then a passage that you all know, we don't need even to turn there. Romans 6 at verse 23, the wages of sin is death. It promises so much. It promises all of these wonderful, glorious, fun, pleasure-filled things. And then when time comes to pay up, it kills you. The only payout with sin is death and destruction. Fortunately, Christ has provided salvation from that. And while we shouldn't talk about the advantages of sin, if anything, we should talk about the disadvantages of sin. We can talk about the advantages of faith and obedience in Jesus Christ. I used to say a lot that the retirement benefits for Christians are out of this world. And that's just kind of corny, so I stopped saying it. But the alternative and advantages that Jesus offers are true and lasting and fulfilling, where sin cannot offer that. So what do we do about the sin in our lives? God sent His Son to die for those sins. And it was a horrible death on the cross. It was a death that we deserve. And His blood was shed so that we can be cleansed and so that we can be made holy. And as we prepare to sing this song, Nothing But the Blood, we need to understand that if we are Christians, we cannot give in to the lies that sin tells us. And if you're not a Christian, you need to understand that it's nothing but the blood that can cleanse us of the sins that we already have. So let's stand and sing this song together.